Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 58. This is Jamie Russo. Thanks for listening. Today, I talk with Peter Black, National Director of Workplace Strategy and Design for Colliers International. His focus over the past 5 years has been helping organizations develop strategies to transform workplaces to align with their business strategy and become a driver of change. I came across Peter through a post on LinkedIn highlighting his recent 5-part series entitled Global Workplace Trends, 5 Shifts Companies Must Make in the Next 5 Years. And the series included a piece on co-working called Ingrain the Co-working Mentality in Your Real Estate Strategy. The piece focused on a topic that is top of mind for flexible office providers, which is how are corporations shaping their strategy to include flexibility? Peter and I talk about a shift to corporate real estate managers having a strategy that includes both core space and flexible space, what that looks like today, and what he thinks it'll look like in the future. So I link to the piece on co-working and the other 4 pieces in the 5-part series in the show notes, and you can find those at www.everythingcoworking.com/58. I will also link to Peter's bio on LinkedIn so that you can find him if you'd like to follow him. And lastly, before we get started, if you are starting a shared workspace, I am kicking off my 3rd cohort of flight groups to help you avoid making all of the mistakes you'd make trying to do this by yourself. So I will help you save time and money with expert guidance. The first 2 groups started in April and May, and our calls are literally the highlight of my month. The groups are amazing. They're a combination of getting ready to sign leases for spaces and in their first year of operation. And it's kind of a mastermind format where we help each other answer business questions and get the business off the ground, and then I will bring in experts to answer questions as appropriate. Last week, we had a great guest that talked about marketing a shared workspace. So they're going super, super well. And we're making some updates to the format, which is going to include some one-on-one access to me to get your individual needs addressed throughout the month, in addition to the group calls. So if you'd like more info, text the phrase flight group to 44222, and I'll also include a link in the show notes to get more info. And here we go on today's episode.
Peter, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really excited about our conversation, and I appreciate you. This is morning for you. You are in Sydney, Australia, right?
Yes, I am. We're in the middle of winter.
I was just going to say, in winter, right? We're having an unusual, like, humid day in San Francisco. It's like 80 and humid, which just doesn't happen very often. And I was literally just thinking, it's like the opposite for you. It's morning for you. And so how cold does it get in the winter? It doesn't snow in Sydney, does it?
No, it doesn't snow in Sydney, but it gets, we get down to a chilly, converting it to Fahrenheit, about 42, I suppose.
Okay.
In the evening, in the midwinter, we've just got over the worst of that. We're kind of into the spring in a way here in Sydney now. So it's a really nice temperature. It's a great time in Sydney. If anybody wants to visit, come and visit in August, September.
Right. Perfect. Well, right. A good way to get out of the heat in the US. So, yeah. Well, I came across your work. We were just chatting probably on LinkedIn, and you've published a series of reports. It's a 5-part series on kind of flexibility, wellness in the workplace, which is another passion of mine. We probably won't get into that today. So, but I wanted to dig into the trend. You wrote one on the co-working mentality and real estate strategy, which I'm looking forward to digging into a little bit. And I will put links to his Peter's work in the show notes. This is episode number 58. So everythingcoworking.com/58. And you can find links to the papers that we're referencing today. So Peter's work is just really kind of on target with a lot of the conversations I've been having in the marketplace around where flexibility is going and seeing, you know, corporations adopt a flexibility strategy. And Peter, kind of you refer to folks having a strategy that involves core space and flexible space. And for those of us who are in the flexible industry, we're excited to sort of see this tipping point happen. And I'm curious about your perspective, since you're kind of deep into it, like where we're at in terms of adoption of that strategy. And you primarily do your work in Asia Pac. So I'm curious if you have a perspective of, you know, is Asia Pac a little bit of ahead of the US on adopting flexible space? So we'll kind of
I'll give you a little bit of background about the paper, actually. It's one of a series of five. And it was a result of, we have about 60 people like me in Colliers all around the world, and big concentration in Europe. And last year in Amsterdam, which I think is a bit of a hotbed of innovation with workplace, we had our annual conference there. And out of that conference, we had people from all around the world there, people who were interested in strategy and workplace. And we decided that we would try and figure out some trends which were common around the world. And we came up with five of them. One of them was this co-working mentality. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting that it was, you know, in a lot of ways we're isolated in Australia. We're the other side of the world from the United States and Europe. And it was interesting to see that similar trends were happening all around the world that were happening here in Australia in the co-working space. So that was one fascinating thing, I think. And then the other thing that we found is particularly after what they call the crisis in Europe and what we call the global financial crisis in Australia, and I think probably what you call the Great Recession mm-hmm. in the United States, there was a real focus on becoming much more efficient and much better utilising space. And really the philosophy of this core space and flexible space came out of a quite a big body of work that we did with an accounting firm. And they had a target of aligning real estate costs with their revenue. And they wanted to really work that and lower that ratio down as minimum as possible. And we said, well, the only way you can really do that is to start looking at flexible space as part of your workplace strategy and part of your real estate strategy. And we said the future is so unpredictable for most companies, including this client of ours, that it's very hard to predict how much space you will actually need in the future because they just don't know how business is going to play out. It's very uncertain times now. So we said the best strategy for them, we developed a strategy for them, was to really minimise the space that they were committed to on a long-term basis to the absolute minimum, then go into a building or a commercial space that had flexible space available to them for seasonal peaks, unpredicted growth, and shared spaces that they take a big chunk of their real estate footprint that they don't use on a regular basis. Yeah. So it really grew out of that requirement from a real client and trying to figure out the best way to align their real estate costs with their revenue and minimize their costs.
So in that example, I'm curious, what does the flexible space look like? In our terms, we talk a lot about either co-working or serviced office space, but is it, did you put them in a commercial building that's kind of built for flexibility that can sort of manage that, in their portfolio, or kind of what does that exactly look like?
Well, it's a commercial building, definitely, but it's a commercial building which has got a whole bunch of facilities in it. So there are shared space. If you imagine the top floors of the building where they go into, the bottom floors of the building is the flexible space.
Okay.
The flexible space includes some, state-of-the-art meeting rooms with, latest technology, et cetera, that's constantly being refreshed by the building owner. That's available to all of the building on a bookable basis. And then flexible space is basically co-working space that they have available to them to rent out on demand basis.
Yeah.
So it can look like a traditional like a WeWork space, for example.
Yeah.
Or it can be really simply just a workspace. Yeah. You know, to be office space.
And in that example, does the owner of the building operate the flexible space and the meeting room space themselves?
I believe they do, although I believe they're getting in a third party operator to help them with that.
With that, okay. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean,
the other thing about, the co-working mentality, our paper was talking about this, the co-working mentality, there's a bit of a philosophical position around co-working that it's, seen to be much more creative, mm-hmm. much more collaborative, and much more connected with what's happening in the technology world and out there in the real world, if you're a major corporation. So there is an attraction for more traditional corporations to say, okay, we want to be innovative and flexible, and we want to be creative, and our traditional space and our traditional view of real estate is not really doing it for us. So let's put the creative people and the people who are innovators into a situation where they can get that sort of cross-pollination happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it does a couple of things for them. It provides that sort of flexibility, reduces their risk in terms of their real estate costs,
right.
And provides them that opportunity to, be connected.
Right. So sort of intangible and tangible benefits. Yeah, absolutely.
That was a couple of years ago, and that was really the first one that we really worked closely with that firm, financial industry firm, to develop that philosophy. And it's becoming really attractive to a lot of corporations because they have the same sort of pressures on them in terms of costs and unpredictability.
And do you see this adoption sort of moving more quickly in any specific, you kind of talked about Amsterdam being a hotbed of innovation. It seems to me that Australia is also an early adopter on a lot of the creative, flexible space. Do you see areas of the world that are moving more quickly on this than others?
Well, definitely. It's interesting to say that. I think Australia historically has been an early adopter of stuff, sorts of things. We're very open. Well, we're an immigrant country like the United States.
Mm-hmm.
We're open to people coming into Australia and contributing to our society. I think it's just that mentality of always looking for new things, being open to ideas, kind of a little bit of cultural cringe there, saying, okay, if it's done overseas, it must be better than what we do.
Right.
There is a bit of that.
Like a healthy paranoia, sort of. That
exactly.
Yeah.
And also, we're in the middle of a huge boom here, particularly in Sydney, in terms of development. We have a very, very healthy economy here, and there's lots of things happening, lots of buildings being built. So there's lots of opportunities for experiments to happen in a way, and new ways of thinking to happen, because there's a lot of turnover happening. I'll give you an example. Half of my family is in Milan, and last time I went there, they went to a new development in Milan, and they were really excited about it. It was going to transform Milan incredibly, the business center of Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite a building. And I'm thinking, well, we do that sort of, a building like that opens every couple of weeks in Sydney. I'm saying that to illustrate that, there's lots and lots of things happening here and lots of opportunities to actually innovate.
Yeah, and I also seems to me that the more conservative industries like accounting, I think one of the early examples I heard, I think it was at a work tech conference in New York, and I think it was Sydney example, was a bank doing kind of a sort of an internal co-working type collaborative open space. And
yes, they're doing that. Definitely they're doing that. And there's a major development in Sydney, which has become a bit of a financial center. It was an old shipping area that's been
used. Yes, that was the example, I think, that I'm thinking of.
One of the things that we just had a second workplace, global workplace conference in Barcelona this year, just earlier this month, last month. And we had a presentation from a financial institution based in Amsterdam. And they've gone kind of a step further, and they've gone to... adapting agile working methodologies that are typically used in the technology industry into a financial institution, and they're converting their entire business in Amsterdam to that model, which in a way is much more of the co-working mentality again, you know, taking elements of that co-working space into their work environment. So I thought that was really interesting as well.
Yeah, it's so you're definitely seeing examples of this shift into more flexible workspace or internal sort of agile collaborative spaces. How far are we from that being the norm, where most corporations are kind of thinking like that and adjusting their strategies? I feel we hear some sort of forward thinkers, early adopters, but I don't know. It's hard for me to assess kind of where the, you know, the sort of the middle of the pack is at this point. How far away do you think we are from
that idea of core space and flexible space?
Yeah.
Something unusual, you know, 3 or 4 years ago.
Yep.
And a lot of people are talking about it now, you know, it seems to be a sensible idea to adopt. I actually think the next step, you know, we're starting to talk to people about this as well, is if you're a smaller company and you really, the future is very unpredictable, as we all know, does it really make sense to commit to a 5 or 10 year lease for, you know, 10 or 20,000 square feet of space? When you really don't know what's going to happen in the future, does it make more sense just to hand that part of the business equation over to the professionals, the people who provide co-working space, on-demand space, and de-risk the whole real estate part of your business? I think that actually makes a lot of sense myself, that, you know, it's such a huge cost to actually, and it's a huge risk for a company to rent space, rent a certain amount of space on a long-term basis, invest the capital cost in fitting it out, and then you don't know what's going to happen to the business. It could either grow, you know, it could either take off and grow, or it could become static, or it could shrink, and you're committed to that space no matter what. So it makes sense to me that, and also you only go through that cycle of fitting out the space every 5 or 10 years, so that you don't have any experts in-house to do that.
Right.
It really makes sense to me that you just rent on an on-demand basis, and space as a service is makes a lot of sense to me. Now that's happening, you know, companies like Microsoft are doing that for their Salesforce in New York, for example, using a WeWork space on an on-demand basis. So I think that's going to become much more common in the future. Talk to me in 5 years' time and see whether it's correct.
Well, I think that's the, you know, you think it's 5 years versus 10 years. I mean, it's tricky because I guess what you're looking at is you have corporations who may start to adopt this mentality, but then they have current leases that they have to sort of wait out before they make a shift, or they have assets they may need to sell. So you feel like the mindset is moving and it's more of a 5 year mindset shift, but it may take, I mean, could it take longer than that
we've talked to building owners, you know, building owners in Sydney who own, you know, a portfolio of property in this Sydney commercial market. And we've suggested to them, you know, whether they take any notice of us or not, it's another question, another matter. But we've suggested to them start looking at their portfolio of space as a portfolio of space.
Right.
That their client starts a transaction with them on the basis of, okay, I have access to the whole portfolio.
Right.
So.
That's such an interesting mindset. You mean saying I need 10,000 square feet in that little spot right there, like saying, right, like looking at the whole portfolio and say, we may need this, we may need that. What are our options now? Can we, right. So you're sort of signing into a relationship with them versus.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing too is part of real estate, like everything now, is you're buying into a story. And a lot of the co-working space, you're buying into a story of innovation, right. And you know, slightly out there and whatever. If you're a regular commercial building owner, what story are you actually selling?
Yes, right.
And my view is that if you have a portfolio of space, you should be having a slightly different story for each of those buildings within the portfolio. You know, maybe one is a gateway into the city, another one is a more of a healthy building. Yeah. And when you're a tenant of that, start having a building relationship with that building owner, you have access to these different stories in different locations that you can have the benefit of. So, for example, in Sydney, we have a couple of metro or commercial centres in Sydney, and transport is a major problem. You know, getting across a city of 5 million is always difficult.
Yeah.
Why not build a relationship with that building owner where you've got access to a sub-metro area, the central metro area, and you've got, you can use it almost like a co-working space.
Right.
So I think the co-working mentality is we're talking with building owners about that. They're saying, oh, yeah, that's an interesting idea. But I actually think they really need to take that seriously if they've got a future in the, if they want to compete with the traditional co-working spaces.
Right. That occupiers will start to sort of demand that relationship.
Yeah. And it makes sense to me.
ready to play.
It's always thinking about, what's the best for the customer, the user. You know, we too often we look at real estate as, okay, here's a plot of space, you can sort of take it, we'll help you go in there, but you never really, we need to start looking at, okay, what does a customer want? The customer looks at uncertainty, they look at unpredictability, they look at issues like flexible working and transportation issues and work-life balance and all that sort of stuff. And I think the building owners need to start looking at real estate from a customer's point of view and how they satisfy their demands.
Yeah, that makes. So it's sort of related to this. One of the things I struggle with in thinking about how this plays out over time is, are we getting into a little bit of a chicken and egg situation where corporations are starting to have that core space, flexible space strategy, but trying to figure out who the suppliers are of the flexible space? And then the flexible space suppliers waiting for, you know, this tipping point of corporations really committing to that strategy and being ready to be customers. Like we see the IBM WeWork example, which I think is very exciting for our industry because it's a big move, on someone's part. But really, when you look at the marketplace in the US, you know, WeWork and Regus, you know, a couple of other players like Industrious sort of stand out as the options. And then it's so fragmented after that. And I don't know if it's different in Sydney, but how do you see that sort of forming? And I wonder also, from a corporate perspective, will independent operators be in the mix, or will they jump immediately to the building owner who provides those services?
Well, I think there's a couple of questions in that. I think each co-working space provider has their own story that they're trying to sell. One is maybe slightly more upmarket and much more, community focused. One is much more just a provider of space as a product. So there's that sort of philosophy. I think that there is we're probably in an interesting tipping point that if a company like WeWork, for example, needs to grow, I'm not sure whether they can grow by providing space to single operators. They need to probably go up their space requirements. They need to start looking at a market as customers are requiring more and more space.
Right.
They need to move into the corporate space provision.
Which we see them doing, right. They've said that's a core strategy of theirs.
Yeah, absolutely. Which means that at that point, when they start moving into that space where they're providing space for the larger corporates, they start competing with those traditional building owners.
Right.
So maybe what's going to happen, I suppose it's starting to happen already, is they start releasing much bigger spaces from the building owners, which is attractive to the building owners. They get certainty out of that.
Yeah.
And then, chopping up into smaller pieces for the corporate players.
And you think the building owners will start to compete with that? I mean, it sounds like that's happening to some extent. You've got some sort of forward moving.
I think the building owners need to wake up in a way and start thinking about how they are going to compete with that. And I think, you know, just what I mentioned before about using the whole of portfolio strategy, saying, okay, you become a member of our group and you have a, you know, the co-working type provision for their entire portfolio. I think they need to move into that pretty quickly, quite frankly, if they're going to be competitive. I mean, they own the real estate, so they either rent the co-working spaces or they keep control of it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're probably not going to lose in a lot of ways.
Right. Yeah.
But it's a very interesting time, I think. It's we're in a major shift on how space is used and how space is provided. And I also think the real estate companies, like my own colleagues, need to really start thinking about where they fit into all of that equation.
Yes, and it's good. We were chatting a little bit at the beginning. I think of Colliers as, you know, I'm more familiar with the brokerage side, and you were describing, you know, your advisory services, and you were doing, you know, really strategic work with big clients in terms of their overall strategy of space use. So you're really kind of at the forefront of how they're thinking and shifting, how the industry is shifting.
Mm. It's, the industry is shifting in a lot of ways. I think that we've had a big push with activity-based working here in Australia for the last 5 or 6 years. I think that's playing out in a really interesting way that, you know, maybe it doesn't work for a lot of companies. People are rethinking that. And I think, you know, we're in for a really interesting time over the next couple of years on what happens with space and how it's provided. And I absolutely think that co-working and on-demand space as a service is the future of, workplace.
So I'm curious about the activity-based working. What is it that's not working? Is it primarily the focus on open workspace? Or, because I think of activity-based working as being sort of an optimal blend of workspace types, which I think sometimes shared workspaces miss out on. WeWork, for example, you know, you're basically in a shared team space or an open space or a conference room. There's not a lot of variety there. Yeah.
They do have a bit of choice. And I think other providers provide lots of choice for different work settings. We're finding there's a lot of pushback with activity-based working, and people are, a lot of our clients are saying, well, show us the research that actually shows, or our clients' staff, show us the research that's actually showing that activity-based working is benefiting us. Hmm. And there's not that much research that says that.
But activity-based being you're creating workspace environments for different types of work.
Yes, I think that is a great thing that everybody sees a benefit on, having non-assigned desks in that environment where you can roam across quite a large space. There's a lot of pushback with that with our clients.
Okay, got it.
Users.
Yep.
So we're slightly off track here, but I think it's actually relevant to co-working. We're seeing a lot more focus, or we're recommending a lot more focus on much smaller studio spaces that people share.
Okay.
Than having a 100,000 square feet of space that you can roam across and choose a desk with anywhere within that.
Yeah.
I think that's not the future of activity-based working. It's much more about smaller studio spaces that you share with a common business objective.
No, I think that makes sense. And it probably feels a little off track, but I do think it's relevant because I think, it's interesting, you know, when a corporation tries to achieve a certain objective or go after a specific, you know, design or cultural objective and design for, you know, as a means to an end of a cultural objectives, you know, how does that fit in with the flexible piece? Because if you have your core real estate strategy following a certain design approach and way of working, and then you have some flexible folks that are part of the flexible strategy sort of out in the, you know, wild blue yonder, who knows what type of space, how does that sort of, what's the interplay there and how does that work? And actually one of the questions I had put on our list, because one of your other papers is about wellness and how important that is in the workplace. You know, how does that sort of interplay when you may go into a flexible workspace that doesn't have those?
Well, that kind of leads to, you know, having all of your spaces on on-demand basis, rather than having that almost the next step beyond core and flexible. You say, okay, we're going to just do the whole of the spaces on demand, which is flexes up and down as our demand requires. And I, in a way, you solve that problem, because I think it actually is a problem there, you know, having people isolated. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe that's a solution to that problem. But I think in any case, you know, we're seeing a lot of, in terms of wellness, we're seeing a lot of web-based and app-based wellness strategies being put into companies out. So
people can sort of leverage those wherever they're working.
Really interesting. One that we've been talking with lately is about gamifying wellness strategy for a company, where you have challenges. You know, you sign up to an app, you have challenges to it. You have, if you're familiar with Duolingo, if you're learning another language, that's an app, which is a great app. It's a free app, provided you do it every single day. The moment you miss a lesson, you have to start paying.
Oh, that's so interesting. I wasn't familiar with that. That's brilliant.
Yeah, it is. It's brilliant. So gamifying the whole wellness experience would be great.
Right.
And so, that way you can be anywhere there. You can compete against your colleagues.
Right, wherever they are. Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. So, I mean, that kind of covers my list of questions for you based on your report. And I appreciate you sharing your perspective. Are there any kind of overall thoughts about the near future that you want to share as a wrap up?
Oh, look, I think we're in a really interesting time now, where people are exploring all sorts of options to be much more customer centric for building owners, being much more interested in the experience of employees. I think the nature of employment is changing, where it's becoming much more knowledge based, and all of the more routine tasks are being, you know, outsourced. So you're changing the nature of people that are working in what we would call typical, you know, city workplaces. There's a lot of economic pressure still on to make real estate work a lot harder. So I think we'll see lots of changes happening over the next 3 or 4 years, and lots of philosophical battles out there on what's the best way to address them. I think, you know, the whole space as a service is has got legs. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think never a dull moment, and I think we'll see
a lot of.
Yes, and you have a really interesting role. You'll get to see it unfold from the front lines, for sure. Well, thank you for sharing your perspective. I really appreciate your time. And as I said, episode number 58, everythingcoworking.com/58 will include the links to the paper so that you can get more context for what Peter and I were chatting about today. So thanks again for sharing your morning with us, and have a good rest of your day.
Thanks, Jamie. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.